This is episode number 122 with Francesca Cavallo of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now. The Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Barbara Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Before we start today's episode, I just want to let you know that our goal at Founder is to help entrepreneurs succeed however we can by giving away high quality content in the form of interviews, blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, you name it. We put out so much content to help you. And another interesting project that we're working on right now is partnering with world-class founders like Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills like negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free trainings with founders like this, which is 100% free, just go to founder.com/free. Okay, so now let's talk about today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Founder Podcast. My name is Nathan Chan and I am the CEO and publisher of Founder Magazine and the host of this podcast, coming to you live from hometown, homegrown, proudly raised, proudly born from Melbourne, Australia. And today marks a really exciting day. Couple of housekeeping things. By the time that you're hearing this podcast episode, our crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter will have just finished. Now, please do not fret. You can still go and pre-order a copy, but it will be redirected to Indiegogo In Demand. Now, for everyone that has supported our campaign, you have been lucky enough to grab the Kickstarter-only special prices. You can still pre-order the book if you would like it. The prices have increased. They will not be as high as when we go retail in April, but you will be able to still purchase the book at quite a no-brainer price. And you can go to foundermag, foundermag.com/book. Would love your help, would love your support. And most of all, I know you're going to love this book if you're enjoying this podcast. All right, now let's talk about our guest today, Francesca Cavallo, someone who's also in the founder community. Francesca runs a company called Timbuktu Labs, and she produced a project called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, which is also a physical book. And I learned so much from Francesca. They actually have the most successfully funded crowdfunding campaign in history for publishing. So for any book in the world, these guys have raised the most money ever for a publishing book. We're lucky enough to be able to speak with her, pick her brain, and I got to understand what to do for our book, for the Founder Version 1.0 book. And she was very generous with her knowledge and sharing and being transparent, and all her lessons as an entrepreneur. She has a very similar background to us at Founder. She started doing digital magazines, digital apps, but then they've now moved into this physical product, which is an amazing book for young girls, which showcases stories from, you know, inspirational female women, and a fantastic concept, fantastic book. The execution and strategy behind this thing was amazing. We learned a ton, and this will actually conclude, guys, the last episode of the crowdfunding series. This will be part 6 of 6, and we will wrap our crowdfunding campaign, and yeah, we'll be sharing more with you guys around how we've done it, how we've broken it down. So far from recording this is Thursday morning, so 8 hours till the campaign finishes. We've raised close to 190,000. And yeah, it's been a massive success. So thank you to everyone for your support. If you haven't grabbed a copy yet, you still can. Just go to foundermag, foundermag.com/book. All right, guys, now let's jump to the show. So the first question that I ask everyone that comes on is, how did you get your job?
How did I get my job?
Yeah.
I co-founded the company with Elena Favilli. So that's how I got it.
So tell me, how did Timbuktu Labs start?
So basically it was 2011 and the iPad was about to come out, and Elena Favilli, my co-founder, started to think about creating an iPad magazine, because she had the intuition that the iPad would be very cool for periodic publications. So she started working on it, and she's a journalist. So she had always worked in digital journalism and publishing. And at the time, I was working as a stage director, and I had my own theater company, and I was touring Europe with my shows. But yeah, we were together, so I was helping her putting together a mock-up, a video mock-up of what she had in mind. And all of a sudden, the idea that the iPad could be very appealing for kids struck us. And now it's like everyone knows that children love the iPad. But at the time, the iPad still had not come out, so it was kind of very early. So we said, okay, we have a great passion for illustration, and in between tours, I was teaching acting to children whose parents wanted them to become professional actors. So we said, okay, why don't we create an iPad magazine for children? So we started working on Timbuktu Magazine, and Timbuktu Magazine was actually the first iPad magazine for children on the market. It won a ton of awards all over the world for its design and for the platform that we built to publish the updated content every week. So that was the start of the company. So at the beginning, Elena was working full-time as a journalist, and I was working full-time as a stage director, and we would work on this project at night and over the weekends. Then we started doing a lot of... So we learned that what we were doing could be called a startup. And at that time, we were living in Milan, so the startup culture was not very popular then. So we started attending the first startup competitions there, and one of them actually, we won almost all of them, and one of them actually took us to San Francisco for a business gym of 1 month. Mm-hmm. And while we were there, when we left Italy, we had a list of people that we wanted to meet, because we wanted to raise capital to take the company off the ground. And at that point, one of the most active investors in the children's media market was Dave McClure of 500 Startups. Mm-hmm. So we found a way to be introduced to him, because at the time there was no application. You had to find a way to get an introduction. And we kind of somehow worked the very small network that we had there. And we got an intro to Christine Tsai, his partner at 500 Startups. And at that point, we had already launched a second iteration on the magazine. Mm-hmm. And we had roughly 70,000 downloads, which at the time were a decent amount of downloads. And the product was beautiful. So they decided to become our first investors. And since they are so well known, being at 500 Startups allowed us to have the kind of exposure that allowed us to raise that first angel round of a little bit more than $600,000.
Gotcha. Awesome. So did you go through the 500 Startups program, or they were just angel funds?
No. It was also the program.
Got you. Awesome. So you went through 500 Startups. What was that like?
It was amazing. I mean, being an international founder that goes to Silicon Valley for the first time, the most important thing is that you have to understand the culture. You have to start building a network. So I would strongly recommend to anyone to try and get into 500 startups. For us, it was like a game changer.
What year was this? Was this still 2008 or 2009?
No. It was this was the beginning of 2012.
Okay, 2012. All right, got you. All right, so you got into 500 startups. Your staging company that you had, your theater company that you had, what happened with that?
I had still sold one tour of shows, and I hired my mother to managing the company while I was trying this new thing in Silicon Valley. And she did a great job, by the way, but the next year she didn't want to do it anymore, so I suspended the work of the theater company.
Gotcha. Okay, awesome. So you and your co-founder, you're in 500 startups. You're at the next iteration of the magazine. You've had 70,000 downloads. It's 2012. You're the first children's magazine to launch. What happens next?
We understood that having just one app was not enough. So we built little by little. Now we have 13 apps on the App Store.
Yeah, wow.
And because we wanted to build the brand. And we arrived at a point where we had more or less 2 million users all around the world. But at that point, it became clear that it was becoming increasingly harder to build a sustainable company on the App Store around apps for children. Because there are a lot of things that you cannot do when you do apps for kids, about like the kind of data that you can collect, because the laws are very restrictive, and the kind of marketing options. And so it was very, very challenging. And also the revenue model, it cannot be very aggressive, because then parents get disappointed. So, and I mean, it makes sense on an ethical standpoint, but on the other hand, it means that it's really hard to sustain a company that creates products for children.
Yeah.
And that's very sad, because it leaves space to companies that don't create stuff for kids, but that anyway, kids use those apps because they just have more money to market them, and they just pretend that kids are not using them. So, I mean, it was challenging for us, and we started to try and find a way to take the company in a different direction. So we started basically using all the IP that we had created for the magazine and for the other apps in other media. So we did a first deal with one of the biggest publishers in Italy to create 6 paper books from the IP that we had created for the apps.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to create a little, a few like physical products. The book were one part. Another part, we partnered with the NFL to create a toolkit that allows underserved communities to create and build, design and build their own playground.
Yeah, wow.
And so we did that, and that was very successful. And we did that in San Francisco for the Super Bowl, the latest Super Bowl. And then we decided to self-publish a book, so without dealing with another publisher. And that's where Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls came about.
Yes, I see. Now, this has been a massive success. And I was super excited to hear about what you guys are doing, because you guys are part of the founder community. And before we jump to that, I want to talk a little bit more about the magazine and the publishing side of things and the business mm-hmm. model side of things, because I myself get a lot of questions around this, and I know that our audience would love to hear. So you said that you started to build a brand. You were looking to build a brand. It wasn't just one magazine. You started building apps for kids.
Yeah.
But it was difficult in terms of, you said you couldn't have an aggressive revenue model. So what did the revenue model look like in terms of monetization for these apps? Did you have a subscription? Were they one-off purchases? Were they fairly low ticket item purchases? Because I agree, that is true that, and I found this too with Founder, there's a great subscription-based model here with magazines, but the scale isn't as large as I anticipated or thought it would be at $2.99 a month. and our magazine is one of the biggest in the business section on iTunes. I just realized that the market, you know, it is big, but not as big as you may think. So I'm curious to hear your side of the table on that side too.
Yeah. So in our case, we had the subscription for Timbuktu Magazine. And then we tried a few different things with the other apps. The one that worked the best was having a free version of an app. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, our hit was Timbuktu Pizza. So we had like, and that's an app that teaches kids how to make 10 classic Italian pizzas. So we had a light version of the app with just 3 unlocked recipes, and then a different app, the Pro app, with 10 recipes. In our case, that's the model that worked best. The subscription was okay, but it didn't, like, the number of subscribers grew at a very slow pace, and that made it very hard for us to, because, you know, when you have a magazine, you have to produce content every month, and it's expensive if you want to create, like, great content. So for us, it was challenging to keep that model, whereas the app sale of the light version of the app and the other app that cost $4.99, so not super low, that worked best for us.
Yeah, no, I see. And I totally get it around, you know, building a brand. That's something that we identified early on with Founder. It's much more than a magazine. You know, it's a podcast, it's, you know, a blog, it's e-learning, you know, educational based products, it's a membership site, all these other things. It's all about building a multifaceted brand, which has many assets underneath it, and that's how the business model looks like. So, okay, so tell us about how the idea for the book came up. And it's funny, I'm really curious to pick your brain, because this is a project. This project you're going to talk about next, this is a project we've had on our to-do list for the past 2 years, and it just makes so much sense, because as magazine publishers, we have that in-house team. We're really good at content, and we'll be doing it for a while. It makes sense to just do a physical book or do something physical. It's a massive challenge. It's really fun, but please. So tell us what happened next. How did you come up with this idea?
For this project, we wanted to change a little bit the way we marketed the product. So we said, okay, let's just work on a theme that's very close to our heart. And that's when we said, okay, I mean, being female entrepreneurs, we are, Timbuktu Lab is a startup founded by two female entrepreneurs, my partner, Elena Faviglia, and I. We faced many challenges due to the gender biases that are very strong in the startup world, as in any field, really. So what happened was that one year and a half ago, Elena wrote an op-ed for The Guardian titled Silicon Valley is more Flintstone than Jetsons when it comes to women. So she, in this op-ed, she was just describing some of the experiences that, unpleasant experiences that we had with, like, raising money in the valley and the kind of obstacles that we faced because it's hard to find the women investors and, you know. So the interesting thing was that the article received a ton of comments, and while there were many women with whom our experiences resonated, there were a huge amount of men who were very offended by the article and believed that an appropriate response to disagreeing was like threatening us. And we received death threats on Twitter. And
that's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's really horrible. So we said, okay, if grown-ups think that this is an appropriate response to someone just telling you about their experience, it means that we really need to, like, focus on this and make sure that the new grown-ups won't think that this is appropriate anymore. And we can do that because we have a children's media company. So we started saying, okay, this is a theme that we really care about. So we started this newsletter called Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls. And basically, at the very beginning, we started with a survey and we asked people a few questions to understand what their take was on this. And we found out that many dads had these also, like, people that, like, men that were sensitive to this theme and their daughters, they couldn't find enough role models or examples to point their, like, to talk about with their daughters. So we said, okay, in this newsletter, we will give you, like, topics and conversation starters that you can use at the dinner table to make your conversations more positive around, like, women in society. And, you know, some people want to be trained. It's not just that there are people who realize that they don't know, that they have biases that they don't want to pass on to their kids, and they want to do something about it. So we use this newsletter as a tool for them to just point out things that were happening and telling them nice stories that they could use with their kids, basically. And the response to this newsletter was amazing because people emailed us back thanking us for the things that we told them and telling us that their kids loved the stories that they had told them. I don't know. It really had a very positive response. So based on this newsletter and on some of the stories that we saw had more like the biggest open rates or the biggest number of positive responses by people, we put together a book proposal on a simple Google Doc. And we asked the most engaged members of the newsletter if they would buy a book like that. So a collection of stories, you know. And many of them pre-bought the book. And it was just a Google Doc. There were no, it was no fancy illustration, no fancy design. Just a book proposal like you would send to your agent when you were right at the beginning. And they put their money there. So that was a really like a turning point for us because we were like, okay, I think we have something that we can bring to a bigger audience. So we started creating giveaways, for example, for books that encourage girls to pursue STEM careers or, you know, things that parents that are sensitive to this theme could love to make our mailing list bigger. Yeah, and we started working on putting together the campaign with several months in advance. So it was really thought through in a very careful way.
Gotcha. So you decided to crowdfund this product, and yeah, tell us about the campaign. How long did you guys spend? Because to give the audience some insight, first of all, let's start off. How much have you raised so far? It was extremely successful. I think it's the most, is it the most successful publishing campaign on Kickstarter or one of?
It is the most crowdfunded original book in history. So far, wow. Only the Bible raised more money than us.
Wow.
So, yeah. So we raised so far $1.1 million. Wow. And of this, we raised $675,000 on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And then after the end of the Kickstarter campaign, we moved the campaign to In Demand on Indiegogo to keep raising money. And we almost doubled the amount of money that we had raised on Kickstarter.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, look, first of all, congratulations on all your success. Now,
thank you.
You're welcome. This is an amazing story. Now let's talk about the campaign. Let's talk the strategies, the tactics, some of the things that you've done. Very, very smart how you validated the concept and you sold the manuscript before you even created anything at all to see that there was a demand. And tell us, you know, so are you still running the other apps and publishing the other apps or are they still in go mode?
Well, they are still available for a purchase on the App Store, but we stopped publishing new apps because for us, the margins were not interesting enough to put our energies there.
Gotcha. So you've taken a bit of a pivot.
Yeah.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. So when did you start working on the campaign?
We started working on the campaign 3 or 4 months before the launch. Of course, like all the preparation before was also leading to the campaign. So overall, I'd say 9 months before, but really focused on the campaign 3 to 4 months before.
Got you. And when did you start building your email list for the giveaways and building up that wait list?
1 year before.
1 year, wow. And are you able to share how big you built that mailing list to before you launched the campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a newsletter of parents that were like they loved Timbuktu's product. So we had that newsletter of about 6,000 people. Mm-hmm. And then we built a new newsletter specific for this product that when we launched was about 6,000 people.
Gotcha.
So overall, we had a very targeted list of 6,000 people and a little less targeted list, but it was still parents of another 6,000 people. So, yeah.
Gotcha. And they were the people that supported your campaign within the first 24 hours. Like that was the core audience you found. So tell us about the prep work. What were the biggest, most important things that you did that, really made this campaign a success?
So one of the first things that comes to mind is that a lot of people, when they think about the video of the campaign, focus a lot on the video making part, on having the coolest images, And I would say if you have $10 to invest on your video, invest $9 on the script and $1 on the video. It's counterintuitive, but we did 13 drafts of the script before you really need to hit the nail on the head on the things that you say, the way your video is structured, and you do that in the script phase. You don't do that with the camera. Then, of course, if your images are also cool, that's a plus, but the script is like paramount. That's very, very important. So what you do is you study very closely other campaigns in your space that have done really well, and you try to compare them and understand, comparing the video, comparing what they say, how they structure the message, and you really try to come up with the best possible script with a very strong hook in the first 20 seconds of the video. The first 20 seconds must really be wow, because that's where the people on Kickstarter decide if they're going to keep watching the video or not. So in our case, one of the feedbacks that we received more often from the people that supported the campaign was that our video starts with, once there was a girl who wanted to marry a prince, and then the marry a prince sentence is deleted and it's replaced with walk on Mars. Mm. You don't imagine how many people told me, oh, the beginning of the video, I really felt it talked about me and I really understood it. I thought it was cool. That's why we did it. But I couldn't imagine that so many people would tell me how important that had been, that first 10 seconds had been for them to decide to back the campaign.
Because one thing I would tell you, just some feedback, Francesca, is I've watched the video and because we're working on a campaign to do a coffee table book for Founder, Best Of, and I've watched the video quite a few times because I think it is so well done and it's so the story, and it just comes from the heart. It's very, very real.
Yeah, that's we really worked a lot on that. Mm. If you watch our video, you will hear that the audio sucks. And there are many things that if we had more resources, we could have done it more fancy, But I'm really proud that we spent so much time on having the best possible story, because that proved to be very, very important. So that script is the first thing that I would say.
Yes.
Then, there are a lot of people that are reaching out to us, and they have launched a campaign, and they ask us, what should I do to get your media coverage? I mean, if you ask yourself this question after that you launch the campaign, it's already way too late.
Mm.
So you really have to, again, study other campaigns in your space that have been successful, and take a look at all the journalists that wrote about those campaigns. And what we did was we put together a list of, I think it was 150 articles of journalists that had written about other campaigns empowering young girls. That was the kind of feel for us. And then we hired somebody on Upwork to do some data mining and find the email addresses of the journalists who had written these pieces. And 1 week or 10 days before the launch of the campaign, we reached out to them and we told them, look, I read this article, I really enjoyed it, and I wanted to tell you that in 10 days I'm going to launch this and that, and I would really love you to check it out. And so you kind of try to build a relationship, because you have to give them the time to grow passionate about your story, and potentially you have to find at least a couple of publications that want to that get so excited about your story that they cover you the day that you launch.
Yeah, got you. And on that front, so you pitched 10 days before, and mm-hmm. You just kept, if you had anyone that wrote back to you or shown any interest, you actually orchestrated and said, hey, look, we're launching X day. We'd love to have your help on writing a story on this day, or?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some people are going to tell you no, and that's okay. You're okay. I mean, any other day, it's okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But there are also people that are going to be very passionate about what you're doing, and they are going to try to help you. So it's always good to ask.
Gotcha. And did you build up a street team of people already in your community that would help with the promotion and help getting behind the campaign, because you guys already have an audience and a community?
Yeah, we did. So what we did was we created a Thunderclap campaign, and we messaged privately all our friends and people that we know that are passionate about Timbuktu. It's very important that you message them privately, because you don't want to blow your own launch by, saying, please support this campaign, because you are going to ask for a lot of support after the campaign has launched.
Mm.
So you don't want to confuse people asking them to support too many things, because then people don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. We message them privately and we ask them, please support this Thunderclap campaign. And we got 250 people, I guess, or 500 people, I don't remember now, that supported us on Thunderclap. And we did the paid plan there, because it's very important that you can change the date or the time in case your campaign shifts. I would strongly recommend to go with the paid version as opposed to the free version, because with the free version, once you set up the date, you cannot change it anymore. And instead, it's very important that you have control on making sure that everyone that supported you shares the message on their social feeds at the right time.
Gotcha. And you'd recommend a Thunderclap? You find it effective?
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, when you press launch on Kickstarter, you really want to make sure you don't leave anything that can, as you have to build as much momentum as you can. And whatever you can do, you have to do it.
Got you. And when did you guys have a launch party?
We did not. So we didn't, all that we did was digital.
Gotcha.
We didn't do any live events.
Got you. Okay. Let's keep this going. Anything else that would you think was an absolute must if you were to do another crowdfunding campaign that really helped you guys get amazing traction? You had a great product, great story, nailed it with the video, crushed it with the press. What else?
One other thing that I think was very important was we created this page where we basically said to all the people that came to the campaign, if you share this campaign on Facebook, Twitter, and email, you can immediately download this great illustrated story about a female scientist. And that really encouraged people to share the campaign as much as possible. And so that's another thing that I strongly recommend anyone to do.
Can you just delve a little deeper on telling us how the mechanics of getting people to share and the timeline? So did you get people to share after the campaign launched, or like, can you tell us about that part?
No. Yeah, sure. So basically, if you go to our Kickstarter campaign, so just Google Kickstarter Goodness Stories for Rebel Girls.
Yes.
You will see that on the, like, there was the very first part was the picture, the mock-up of the book,
yes,
and the description of the project, right?
Yes.
Now you see the stretch goals, but that wasn't there. But then immediately after the description of the product, we, yes, had the share part. So there is an image that says share our project plus get 3 free ebooks. So basically there is a button, and if you click on it, you are brought to a website with our picture, and it says support us with 3 clicks, and you share it on Facebook, you email a friend, and then you can download these 3 ebooks that we had prepared beforehand. And they are 2 illustrated stories about 2 scientists and the PDF on how to raise confident girls.
Got you. And you saw a lot of success with that.
Yeah. It really encouraged people to share this with their social circles, which is really important because it really makes your campaign like exponentially viral.
Got you. And can you wrap some numbers? Do you know how many shares was triggered from that little?
No, I don't have any numbers right now, but during the campaign, we had like moments where like there were, you know, when Facebook tells you how many people are talking about something,
yes,
and it was like 40,000 people were talking,
wow,
about it. So, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay. So what else did you do? Is there anything else that you'd like to share that was just an absolute game changer?
Well, I said that the quality of the video can also be not great.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's in our experience, it's very important that the images in the campaign really look awesome, because that's the part where you really have to show that users are going to get something high quality. Sometimes, I've seen many campaigns where that were not very successful. And in many cases, I attribute that to the fact that they didn't take enough care of the images that they showed in the campaign. It's very important that you give as much information as you can to the people about the physical qualities of the rewards that they're going to get or will have. So, for example, in our case, we gave them the dimensions of the book, the kind of paper, the kind of cover that they would get. And you have to understand that on Kickstarter, like, the biggest obstacle to overcome is the fact that people are buying something that doesn't exist yet.
Mm.
So you really have to make an effort to make them see what they're going to get, because that's going to win their resistance to put their money on something that they will get several months later.
Ah, got you. So you had a big focus on building as much trust as possible.
Yeah. That is why in our video, for example, you see a lot of images of other things that we have been able to deliver.
Gotcha.
So it's not just like 2 people that you have to establish authority.
Got you. I see. Okay. And I'm curious, because when it comes to this project, you closed it off a while ago. please tell me, when it comes to what happens next, you fulfill this product. What happens next? Are you guys, like, what does the business model look like, do you think?
Well, we are right now we are focused on, so the campaign, the Kickstarter campaign ended at the end of May. But as I said, we are still going. So it's still possible to pre-order the book on Indiegogo.
Yes.
Please do, if you're listening to this.
And, we can finish off at where people can go, but please tell us.
Yeah. But so, I mean, of course, it's been quite a ride to put the book together because we are... Now, last week, we gave the files to the printing company in Canada where we're going to print the book. So far, we've been mainly focused on delivering, like making sure that we could fulfill the promise that all our backers, all our almost 25,000 backers from 72 countries can get their books in time for Christmas. So we're just starting now to look at what we're going to build next. And the way we see it is, and the way many backers, like the kind of feedback that we received from many backers is that they as well, like they see this as a movement. So we really want to serve the audience that we created around this book with as many products as we can with the Rebel Girls DNA, because we really feel that there is a big opportunity and the big need from people that would really love to inspire their daughters and their sons with the story, with these incredible stories of women from all over the world. And you know, part of the reason why we created the books with 60 different female artists, each portraying a different woman. It's also that in the DNA of this product, there is like a respect for women that look different from each other. Mm. This is like, this may seem like trivial details, but they are not, because when you look at the, like all the back to school products and the things, the themed merchandise that parents can buy for their girls, that's not really available on the market. So we really care of like keeping on spreading the message of beauty that can come in any form, in any, like in any shape, at any age, in any color, because this is something that's still, unfortunately, still very rare. And we saw that this message resonated so powerfully with our audience. So we want to keep creating products along these lines.
Yeah, wow, amazing. And what do you have in mind for some products? Do you think a membership community? Do you think where you have premium content? Do you think more books? What, or more, maybe more physical products in other shapes or forms? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, we're thinking of, so our vision is to create a new kind of media company that also creates physical products as well as digital things, because we've always had a very, like, we always cared that our products would feel very warm to the people that use them. And we started this even with our apps. But what we realized that is that when you also build physical products, you really have an opportunity to make it like really much warmer than if you just do digital products, because there is something irreplaceable in the physical experience of something that you created with someone in mind. So we really want to keep creating a combination of digital and physical products and to build a new kind of media company along these lines.
Yeah, I think you guys got a lot of good times ahead of you, a lot of success, and I'm really excited to keep watching your journey.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
So two last questions. One, you talked about after the campaign closed, people could still access In Demand via Indiegogo. What did you mean by that? Like, what does that entail?
So that's actually a very important question, because basically what happens is that when you build a Kickstarter campaign that lasts, in our case, it lasted 29 days.
Yes.
And it's usually a good idea not to make it last more than 30 days, right?
Yes.
But what happens is that if you did your job well, when the campaign ends, there you still have a lot of momentum going on, and you don't want to waste that momentum because people arrived late to your campaign. So in-demand gives you a great opportunity to basically migrate your Kickstarter campaign to a pre-order website that has recently been incorporated within Indiegogo. So just think that the first day after the end of our Kickstarter campaign, we had set up the in-demand campaign, and on the first day, we did, like, we had $20,000 in pre-orders.
Wow.
So if we had not continued the campaign on in-demand, we would have lost, like, immediately, I mean, we would have lost at least $20,000. Then what happened is that we almost doubled the number. So there are a lot of people, when your campaign works, there are a lot of people that will find out about your campaign when it's over, and you don't want to miss on their sale opportunity. And that's why migrating your campaign on in-demand, which is now hosted inside Indiegogo, which is amazing, because basically you're still in a community of people that are passionate about crowdfunding and always looking out for new products to buy. So it's really great to use this opportunity. And the other thing that's really great is that to collect your pre-orders, you can work on with this company that's really great. It's called Baker Kit.
Yes.
And they're really great. And what they do is they allow you to send surveys through their system when you're like when you have to collect the shipping address for your backers. But the greatest thing is that you can set up a shop there. So basically, when the backers come in to complete their survey, they have a system where you offer them the opportunity to, for example, do you want to add a copy of the book to your orders, or two copies, or do you want to add a poster or a tattoo sheet? So in that case, for us, we made from people that added things to their order on Baker Kit an extra $60,000.
Wow. So you had some other products that you offered with Baker Kit.
Yeah, yeah, which were basically, I mean, most of these products were free for the first backers. So in the Kickstarter, we really, like, it's a first community and they have to put their money in when no one has yet. So we really wanted to create for them a premium experience. And so with their pledge, they all the Kickstarter backers also got a coloring book, a tattoo sheet, and a poster. So basically the same things that we created for the Kickstarter campaign, then we put them as add-ons for the backers of like in demand, the ones that arrived later.
Gotcha. I see. Amazing. And just one last question on the Indiegogo piece. So you actually, on the lead up to the campaign finish, you went to Indiegogo, they have an in-demand service, and then you set up a link to go from Kickstarter to this in-demand service via Indiegogo, correct?
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
if you go now to our Kickstarter page, you will see a green button saying pre-order, and that button will take you to Indiegogo.
Gotcha. So you didn't build a microsite or anything?
No. Not yet.
Gotcha.
Now we will build a website with Shopify, but yeah, we haven't done it yet. That's why it's very convenient, because even if you haven't set up a shop yet, it's very straightforward.
Gotcha. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, Francesca, this has been an amazing conversation. I myself have learned so much, because we have a campaign coming up. You know, we're serving different industries, different niches, but very similar kind of media company. You know, we started with digital magazines. We're venturing out into many different products and having a multifaceted model. And it's, like I said at the start, it seems so natural that for us, you know, we've got all this amazing content. We've got the, you know, the IP and the teams, the skills in-house. You may as well, you know, publish a physical book And it's a really fun project. And you may as well, like, I think crowdfunding is a great way to involve your community as well.
Absolutely.
So I have learned an incredible amount. I'm sure our audience has too. So where's the best place people can go to support your campaign and find out more about Timbuktu Labs?
Yeah, they can go to Indiegogo and look for Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls. And they can still pre-order the book and get it in time for Christmas. So, I mean, it's really going to be the book of the year. One of the funnest, like one of the unexpected parts of the campaign has been like that. When a project takes off like this, then you get all sorts of interesting conversations with the biggest agents on the market, and you kind of start to learn more about the book market and how you could take this book. And so this is really going. It's unprecedented. So I really think that having the first edition of the book will be pretty special. So you can go on Indiegogo and look for Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls.
Awesome. Fantastic. Look, thank you so much for your time. It was an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure for me too. Founder community is really amazing. And I got a lot of inspiration also for building this campaign from my involvement in the Instagram domination course. And I strongly recommend to anyone to join the founder community, because it's really like a place where you can, if you want to create your own job and be inspired by your peers, it's really a great place to be. So thank you, Nathan.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for the kind words.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.